the wait is almost over. By the end of the week, users will be able to download WindowEyes 4.0 Public Beta 1, the screen reader from GW Micro. Doug Joffrey of GW Micro joins us on the line now, and we certainly appreciate you coming on the program at such a busy time for your company, Doug. It's been around about a year now since we last had a release from GW Micro. Has this taken a bit longer than you originally anticipated?
It has taken a little bit longer. Every time we get into it, of course, there's always more things that we want to do. We want to do this, we want to do that. Braille was a lot bigger than we had originally anticipated. Internet Explorer 5.5 came out after we realized that we were going to work with Internet Explorer, so that kind of threw a wrench into things. So there's always things that you never anticipate, but we realized we had to get those done, and so we just decided to put things off a little.
So let's take a look at some of the new features that are in version 4.0. And as you've already alluded to, the big one is Braille support, something that people have been asking for some time, and you're finally delivering it. Can you tell us a little bit about what people can expect in terms of Braille support?
Yeah, that certainly is our biggest feature that we've added to WindowEyes 4.0. That's been asked for over and over and over, and we basically apologize it's taken this long, but I think we've done it right. Spent a lot of time beforehand getting some information from a lot of Braille users because Braille was new to us, and a lot of just average users trying to come up with the best features and the best way to do it. So we will certainly be supporting all the major displays, and our public beta that's coming out will offer all but just a couple of those, and those others should follow very soon. Some of the nice things that it has that I think that make it stand out from some of the others are its configurability of how easy it is to configure things. One of the nicest things it has is a hotkey dialog. And if you're familiar with WindowEyes on its keyboard hotkey dialog, it allows you to go in there and easily set up what keystrokes you want to do for what function. Well, with Braille, we've done the same thing, only now you hit a button and it says press the Braille key combination that you want. You press it, and then it says, what do you want this combination to do? And it can be any number of hotkeys that WindowEyes supports or any keystrokes that you could have otherwise pressed from the keyboard. So you basically can generate your own keystrokes, hotkey, from the Braille keyboard itself. So it makes it very, very flexible. You don't have to get into a scripting language, for instance, to define your keyboard. And obviously, we'll certainly offer defaults for a lot of these keys that are there, but you have the advantage of going in and very easily editing keys or adding your own keys that we didn't do from the factory. So that's one of the big things that makes, I think, our Braille stick out from some of the others.
So what you're saying is then that I can sit here with, say, the Braille light that I have and hit the capture key button on my computer and then press any key on the actual Braille light itself, and WindowEyes sees that key and then allows me to assign it to any function I want it to.
Exactly, or any combination of those Braille keys. Up to 32 keys can be pressed at one time, and if you can do that, you're pretty good. But so any combination of keys pressed, then WindowEyes will display that and say, what do you want to do for this combination of keys?
Okay, and what else is there in the Braille support?
Some of the other nice things are, one, we have a translation dialogue, or rather a translation table dialogue that allows you to use our factory tables. For the first public beta, it's only going to have U.S. English and U.K. English, but we will be adding some other languages for that. So you can certainly use one of our factory tables, or there are two user-defined tables. And I already got an email from an individual who said, oh, great, because I love to do Russian. And Russian certainly won't be a table that we'll support at first, but we will be adding later, hopefully. But anyway, she could go in and define her own Russian table using one of our two user-definable tables. Or if you want to use one of our factory tables, but there's just a couple that you really don't like the way that they're defaulting to, you could easily change those as well. So it's all right in a nice, easy dialogue that you can very easily change these tables. And we will offer a hotkey that will allow you to switch languages on the fly. So if you're reading a document that's multilingual or whatever, you can very easily hit a key, switch the Braille table to another language, and go off and do your reading.
Could you theoretically use it to create your own grade 2 translation table, or would that not be practical at this stage?
I wouldn't do any translation because it's strictly going to be one-for-one. You can't take a word and convert it down into one cell or something like that.
So, okay.
The first release, and that's a good point, the first release will not support grade 2 Braille. After talking with some users, we found that the majority of the people would rather have basic functionality before we hold it up for another month to work on grade 2 Braille. So certainly in the near future we'll offer grade 2 Braille, but not in 4.0 release.
One of the things that is pretty famous in WindowEyes is that it's possible to bring up a list of available synthesizers that you guys support, and all synthesizers are installed as soon as you install WindowEyes, which means that, you know, if you get a new software synth or something, you don't have to reinstall the entire product. Have you taken that same approach with Braille displays?
Right, we've done the exact same approach. So in our file menu, just as where you were talking about, you can find the Select Synthesizer dialog. There's also a Select Braille Display dialog now. It offers all the displays. There's one list box with all the displays and one list box with the port that it's connected to. You can simply select any Braille display at any time, regardless of what you selected when you did the install, because they're all available all the time. So it makes it very easy to switch displays back and forth, or if you add one later, just pick it and go off and do your thing.
I suppose there'll be some people who say, well, that's all very well, but I don't really want all this disk space taken up with drivers and things I'll never use. How much disk space do these redundant drivers actually take up?
They're actually very, very small. If I had to guess right now, I would say certainly less than 100K of space. So it's a very small amount. In today's term, 100K is nothing.
We'll demo the Braille support shortly, but let's take a look at what's happening with Internet Explorer support, because this is where WindowEyes made a gigantic leap forward, and other screen readers have, I guess, subsequently caught up, but you guys are trying to push that barrier a little further with this release.
Right, I think we did an excellent job with our 3.1 release, offering Internet Explorer 5.0 support when it first came out. I don't know when it was, maybe a year ago, March or something. But we saw that there was some more that we needed to do, and unfortunately IE5 had some problems, had some limitations, so we kind of worked with Microsoft to try to resolve some of those issues, and with the release of IE 5.5 around the corner, and certainly the public beta is available now, with all that available, it made it a perfect opportunity for us to go in and address some of those other issues that we didn't in 3.1. One of the biggest things is the speed itself. With WindowEyes 3.1, it did a great job of loading it, but if you used it quite a bit, you'd find that it was a little bit slow at times, loading some of the larger pages. Well, now with IE 5.5 especially, it just makes it almost instantaneous. So we had a page that took like 7 minutes. It was a huge, huge page. It took like 7 minutes, now it's down to like 7 seconds. So typically it's just a second or two to load a page, if that even, on a normal web page. But on huge ones even, it's still very, very fast now. And also, we're much more accurate in loading the pages. Windows Update page was a perfect example of the way HTML can be designed. The HTML itself may have a lot of text in it, but depending on what they want to display, they might hide some of that text from the screen. Well, in the past, WindowEyes 3.1 and our competitors, they would actually display that hidden information. So a sighted person doesn't see it, but with the screen reader, you were hearing it, which was bad. So we, again, resolved that issue, and Windows Update is a perfect example of that now, where we show exactly what is visible on the screen. So that works much nicer.
Another useful example of that, by the way, Doug, is you often load an HTML page with a little message that's hidden there just in case you're not using a Java-compatible browser. But often with these MSAA-type modes in the past, you see the message anyway. You really should be using a Java-capable browser to get the most of this page when you actually are. So that message, I presume, would no longer be seen.
That's correct, and that's very confusing to a user if they were to hear this message, yes. So that's a nice thing. So the whole goal is to make it be much more accurate, not only faster, which I think now I think WindowEyes is certainly one of the fastest screen readers, if not the fastest, as far as loading a page. But speed is only one concern, and our number one concern is reliability, stability, and accuracy. And so we've really pushed. If speeding up caused a problem, then we would slow it down so we were more accurate. And that, again, is our number one priority. So some of the other accuracies are if you've got a page that has anchors, which basically is a link that allows you to go to another part of that web page. Previously, depending on the web page, if there were frames and things, we wouldn't always take you to the right place. Now when you hit enter with 5.5 on an anchor, it will take you there, and WindowEyes will take you right to that line on that web page. So that's much nicer. Also, WindowEyes, when you hit enter on a button that says, like, submit or whatever your form off to whoever you're talking to, previously you would have to turn MSA mode back on for WindowEyes. Now when a new web page loads, WindowEyes will automatically load that web page for you. So that makes it much nicer. The three-second pause, I don't know if you've ever turned MSA mode on and you had to wait 3 seconds for us to say loading page, that's gone. When a web page is done downloading, it immediately or load that page because IE is now telling us I'm done loading and we don't have to guess anymore and put in a little fudge factor to make sure that it's done loading. So now it loads much, much faster. And just had another thought of another thing there. Some of the other bugs that the old Internet Explorer had that we had to work around, combo boxes. If people were familiar with WindowEyes, a lot of times when they would hit enter on a combo box, it wouldn't give it focus. That's been cleaned up by Microsoft and us, so we've got that working much better. There's a lot of little technical type things that we fixed as well, but the biggest thing is the speed and the stability and the accuracy of the page that we're loading.
I guess with a big company like Microsoft, you know, they can be a bit of a bureaucracy because of their sheer size. And I have to ask you, has Microsoft held you up and therefore held this release up and getting these fixes in there?
Well, it's been frustrating at times, but for the most part, I would have to rank them as being very, very cooperative in working with us. Just recently, yesterday, we just found a bug within Internet Explorer 5.5, the latest beta. With or without WindowEyes, this bug was there, and it only related if you're using MSAA. So the sighted market wouldn't notice it. And we told them about it, and they're very close to releasing the final version, and we thought for sure they were going to say, can't do it, we've already signed off. But they did put a fix in, or they're actually working on getting it in there. So they do take us serious, and we have a very good relationship with Microsoft. They contact us a lot to verify that things are working. And, of course, we're always calling them to make sure that things are working. So on the Internet Explorer front, they've been fantastic.
Well, that's interesting because when we did the very first Blind Line interview where I spoke with you about your life story and what you were doing at GW Micro, you were very much an evangelist, if I can use that term, for active accessibility. You felt that putting eggs in the active accessibility basket was the way to go. You still think that was the right decision?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's definitely proved in the Internet Explorer front. It's proving in other applications that maybe we can talk about, like Acrobat Reader, which we're working with, the Office products and things like that. So we will start seeing more and more of it.
Now, there are some other features besides the ones that we've talked about. One of the features that comes up a lot on the GW Info list, which is the support list for users of GW Micro products, is the issue relating to getting a list of items in the system tray and the time that takes. Of course, I'm pretty sure that WindowEyes was the first to deliver such a list, but the speed has been an issue. Have you had a chance to take a look at that for 4.0?
Right, the 3.1, although it was very accurate on the information that it gave you, it was a little bit slow. It might have taken 2 or 3 seconds to scan each item down in the system tray, down in the bottom right of the desktop there. So if you had 10 items or so, it might take you 30 seconds, which is a pretty, really long time to do that. And we did have a lot of customers asking us if there was anything that we could do to speed that up. So we did take a real hard look at that. And now with the beta that's going to be coming out here with a 4.0, as soon as you hit that insert S, which is our hotkey, we immediately come up with the dialogue. So it's almost as fast as hitting the key press itself to give you that entire list. And then we've carried over that same technology in our auto-labeling of graphics, which will automatically label graphics if they have tooltips. As long as the application is using standard tooltips, this will speed that process up as well. So again, making it much, much faster than it was.
Now, speaking of graphics, there were some quite clear restrictions in terms of what screen resolution you had to be using in order for WindowEyes' graphics and the set files, etc., to work. Is that still the case?
Well, the resolution of the screen has no effect whatsoever. So that never did and still does not cause us a problem. The color resolution that you have, we will work in any color resolution, but with 3.1, we only labeled our graphics for 256 colors. So if you were using 16-bit colors, it would still work. You would just not have any labeled graphics unless you did it yourself. So with 4.0, the same limitation is there as far as that's concerned, but we will be redoing all of our factory set files to have 256 colors and 16-bit colors, so all the graphics will be labeled in those two color resolutions. And we'll also add high contrast colors to those two resolutions as well. So we're effectively going to be labeling every graphic 4 times, all those factory set files anyway. So at least that will allow people to go up to 16-bit and still be able to use their applications as labeled graphics.
Are you planning on offering support for any more products through set files for version 4?
There are quite a few, actually. It seems like almost every day we get users that give us more and more set files and things like that. So certainly we will be offering those that we feel that are more common applications. We always have these set files on our web page, but we don't always put all of those set files on our production disk just because we ourselves don't have a chance to look at the applications and see how well the set files are doing. But for those we can, we will ship. And there are several more of those. We have worked with Lotus as far as Notes 5 is concerned, so this version will support Notes 5, and we will have set files for that. We certainly upgraded all of our set files. We'll have Outlook set files that have been updated and Office set files. And I can't think off the top of my head all the sets, but there will be substantially more set files with this release.
Now, Lotus Notes is an interesting thing because, to my knowledge, that's one of the few companies other than Microsoft that have really embraced active accessibility technology to get their access issue sorted out.
They certainly were the first large company, aside from Microsoft, to take on MSA, and I'm glad that they did do that. They were struggling whether or not they should do their own thing or go with MSAA, and I'm very glad that they did go with that. So we've been working very closely with IBM and Iris, who's actually contracted by IBM to do the work on Notes, in incorporating a lot of this new technology that they're integrating. So with the 4.0 release, we will support Notes 5, as I said, and we will have set files for that. So that was very, very nice. But there are other companies. For instance, Adobe is also working with us here very, very closely to support their Acrobat Reader. So that is probably the next company, next to Microsoft and IBM, who are supporting MSAA on a large scale.
I read your media release about that some weeks ago, just before Easter, with considerable interest. Can you tell us a little bit about that? So you're saying that MSAA is the vehicle that's being used to eventually deliver better access to PDF documents.
Right. I have signed a non-disclosure agreement with them, and I get into too much detail, but basically the goal, because they were showing this product at the last CSUN convention here in the U.S., and there was also a major government show in Washington, D.C. that they were showing WindowWise with their latest alpha version of Acrobat. But what it basically will allow you to do is act just like you were using Internet Explorer 5.5, for instance, with WindowWise. So you can get a PDF document and just bring it right in. It's going to be decolumnized. You're going to be able to use the controls that are within that form, just like you would an HTML document, basically. So there's still some education on the PDF developer's end to make sure that they develop it correctly, just as there is on HTML developers, to make sure that they still use the right techniques. But the basic ground foundation needs to be there, and that's where Adobe's coming in. And as I said, they've been working very, very hard with us, with WindowWise, and things are looking very good on that.
Because I noticed that with some of the documents, the PDF files that you try to read with the Adobe Access plugin, which I find excellent most of the time, but with some documents, you're unable to get into the Access view, or you're prevented from exporting them as a text file or something bizarre like that. Is that the kind of education that you're talking about?
Well, there's a little of both. One, the plugin that it had a lot of problems to begin with. It had tremendous limitations. It would not let you do anything with forms, for instance, and some of the other more complicated PDF documents it didn't know what to do with. So that part will automatically carry over and work right out of the box. But some of the other things, like taking a scanner and scanning a form in a graphic format and putting that in PDF, that's the kind of education we need to get past that and a lot more. But even this new approach wouldn't work with if it's just a graphical representation of a physical page. So that's the kind of education we need to give to the PDF developers and be able to offer us the structure. We need to know from where to where we go with on the form. Somebody handed me a printed form, sometimes it's difficult to know the order that you really would read this back to somebody. So the PDF developer needs to make sure that they supply the order that the form reads through.
Will this kind of access be ready for version 4, or is this a longer-term project?
I think WindowWise 4 will be ready for it. I can't say when Adobe will have Acrobat ready to resell them.
Right, so that's good, though. It means then that if people upgrade to version 4 of WindowWise, that when Adobe is ready, they'll release their tools or whatever, and WindowWise will work just fine with it without any further modification.
Exactly. That's our goal, to make sure that that happens.
Now, you appeared on another Blind Line show, must have been November, I think, of last year, where we were talking about the AOL access issues. Have you been able to make any progress either for version 4 or in the future in terms of AOL access?
Again, I'm under non-disclosure with AOL, so and they're much more strict on going on with this. All I can say is that we are in contact with them, and we are going to do everything we possibly can to make sure that WindowWise supports AOL.
Maybe the question I should have asked at the beginning of this part of the interview was, which companies do you have non-disclosure agreements with?
It's frustrating. You want to talk about it, but they have their needs that they need to protect.
What else haven't we talked about in version 4 that you think is particularly noteworthy?
Well, there's certainly more within the Braille that we haven't talked about, but I think people need to kind of play with that and work with that. There's certainly more on the Internet Explorer front that people can work with. But, like, for instance, verbosity, we didn't even talk about some of the new verbosity that we've added for MFA to be able to help you quickly skip all the garbage advertisement links and things like that to kind of help out with that type of thing. But some of the other nice things are this new version currently supports the latest beta of Millennium. So, again, I'm under non-disclosure with Microsoft on Millennium. I can't talk much about that, but our plans are to make sure that 4.0 will support the final release of Millennium, and so far our testings have proved that that will definitely work. Another nice thing that we're going to be doing, and this we're just about nailed down the finals on this, so I'm 99.9% sure that this will happen, and that is that we will be shipping Eloquence with WindowWise 4.0 and all languages of Eloquence with it. So we're not sure if we're still going to ship Microsoft Speech with it as an option, but we certainly will have all of the Eloquence voices, and we'll be adding a hotkey that will allow people to switch languages on the fly with any synthesizer that supports multiple languages. So that will be nice. We're also adding the ability to allow a user to configure set files for individual users. So if you're on a network environment or something where you want your set files this way but your neighbor wants them this way, you can easily do that type of thing. So I was just kind of looking through the README as we were talking, and the README is a very large file that's going to be coming out with the public beta. It just goes on and on and on and lists probably 100 of different things that we've added or have fixed within this 4.0 release.
I want to talk about the public beta shortly, of course, but let's talk about WindowWise Professional. First of all, what is it?
WindowWise Professional will be our version of WindowWise that will support Windows 2000, which is, of course, and was originally NT5, but Windows 2000 is the current name for it. It's our first product that will support NT at all, and our current goal is to have this product out by the end of the year. It's kind of slipped a little bit more than we would have liked. Some of that has to do with we pulled our resources off to make sure that we supported IE5.5 with our 4.0 version under 9X. But now those resources are back freed up to go back in the 2000 environment. We were showing this at the last CSUN convention again in March, so people could actually get their hands on it and play with it. So it is a real product. It is coming along very nicely. Right now we're making the decision of, do we want to also go back and make some modifications to support NT4 Service Pack 6, because that was the first release of NT4 that supported MFAA. With Windows 2000, it just comes with it, so that wasn't an issue. And WindowWise has become extremely dependent on MFAA, so we pretty much required it. So our goal is to certainly get 2000 by the end of the year, and if at all possible, to get NT4 Service Pack 6 support as well. Say all of the features that we've discussed so far and all of the features that will be in 4.0 will also be in the Windows Professional version. So all the Braille support, everything with IE5.5, all that will be there as well.
For those people who aren't familiar with how all of this works, why is it actually a major undertaking to write a Windows 2000 screen reader? In other words, if you've got something that works in 95 and 98 and Millennium, what's involved to make it work under 2000? Why doesn't it just work out of the box?
If we were a standard application like Office, Word, or Excel, or some of those types of applications, which are pretty much standard applications, they would require very little changing to get to work under NT if they already supported 9X. But with a screen reader, it's quite a bit different. We have to do a lot of non-standard type things to be able to hook in and get the information that's going through to the operating system. Microsoft didn't really foresee that as a need. Why would an application need to do what a screen reader is doing? And so just because we have to get in there and do these low-level things, we need to be very, very specific to each application. And the whole 9X series was very similar, but even 95 versus 98 versus Millennium, there still were minor differences between them that we had to account for. Where with NT, it's quite a bit different. We had to do quite a few different things to be able to get in and get the information that we needed to be able to work with it. So it's, although it seems like it ought to be something simple, it is quite an undertaking. And some of the other things we had to deal with is 9X is 16-bit code as well as 32-bit code. And so WindowWise is both 16 and 32-bit code, and that allows us to do some of the things that the full 32-bit screen readers can't do because we're really aggressively getting into the operating system in its own native form. But NT is strictly 32-bit, so we have to convert everything over to 32-bit at that point. And for good reasons, and it's a good thing to do. But it just takes time to get all this stuff worked out.
Well, that's an interesting point, because quite often you hear somebody from other screen reading manufacturers saying, you know, such and such a screen reader is a full 32-bit application. And yet you're saying that you're proud of the fact that there's some 16-bit code left in WindowWise. How is that?
Well, it's interesting because the operating system is, under 9X, the majority of it is 16-bit code. And, for instance, one thing that a full 32-bit app can't do that we can do is read the Control-Alt-Delete dialog or read GPF dialog. And I'm tired of the 32-bit screen reader saying how wonderful and powerful they are, but yet they can't do something as necessary as reading the Control-Alt-Delete dialog. So I think it's very important to be able to be in the native environment of the operating system. I think saying you're 32-bit is kind of a buzz term that people want to hear, but it's not always the best solution, and certainly in this case it's not.
Right, well, let's take a look at the beta cycle for version 4.0. Now, is the 31st of May a target date for the release of the beta, or is it definitely coming out then?
It is definitely coming out on May 31st.
Okay, now, who can download and install this beta?
Right, the only way to get this public beta is to download it from our webpage. We will not ship out any CDs or anything like that. You must download it. Anyone that's currently running any 3.0 or 3.1 copy of WindowWise, whether it's a full version or a demo version, they can download this public beta of 4.0, install it on their existing 3.0 or 3.1 WindowWise, and it will continue to act as that version. So if it's a demo, it's still going to be a demo, but it'll be the public beta. If it's a real version, then it will be a real version of the 4.0, and you'll be able to use it. It will time out. We've not released the exact timeout date on this, but it eventually will time out. So the user will be forced to either get the next public beta, and we anticipate at least one more, maybe two more public betas before we go into production, or actually purchase the 4.0 version when it's actually out, or revert back to the 3.1 or the 3.0 copy if they so desire to do that.
Okay, so let me just expand on this in kind of monosyllabic terms for people like me. What you're saying then is that if I'm a user of another screen reader and I want to see what you guys are offering, I would have to download the 3.1 demo from your website and install that demo, and then I would download the beta. Is that how it works?
That's correct. Of course, all options, or rather in the final release of 4.0, we'll have a 4.0 demo, but in the beta phase that we're going through, we're not going to make a standalone demo beta.
And what are the restrictions of running a demo of WindowWise?
The only restriction is after 30 minutes, you'll start hearing, every 15 seconds, you'll start hearing an advertisement, basically saying, this is a demo version of WindowWise. After 35 minutes, that's all you'll hear, so you'll hear no useful speech. The machine will still run, but that's the only thing that you will hear, so it basically makes it useless. You also cannot change synthesizers. The synthesizer selection dialog is basically disabled. You cannot change synthesizers, and after 35 minutes, it's useless. So you need to completely exit Windows to be able to use it again for another 35 minutes or 30 minutes.
But for those who have purchased 3.0 or 3.1, there are no such limitations. It will just run as WindowWise always has.
That's correct. You'll have the full capabilities of everything until the timeout date occurs, which, again, would be after the next public beta or after the 4.0 release that happens.
Does the beta of 4.0 get rid of my existing WindowWise installation, or are you going to put it in a separate directory?
It actually needs to overwrite your existing WindowWise installation. So, and we put this quite strongly in the install. We put this in the README that you're kind of forced to read before you go through the install to make sure you understand. But it is good to make, if you want, it's a good idea to back up your existing WindowWise directory, if at all possible, somewhere else, Or, worst case, you could just reinstall the 3.1 if you don't have any set files that you want to save or anything like that. But it does require you to install the beta on top of your existing 3.0 or 3.1 copy.
I suppose I could use Windows Explorer to copy the WindowEyes directory somewhere else, could I, in case I wanted to do a quick restore of the old WindowEyes?
That's what I would suggest. Just make an exact copy of the WinEyes directory and call it WinEyes Backup or something. Don't run WinEyes from the backup. Just keep it in case you need to restore it back to the original. And I would strongly recommend people do that just in case something happens, because this is a beta. We feel quite strongly about it, but if we were done with it, we'd be shipping it. So there's a reason it's a beta, and that is that people test it. And the goal of the beta is not for people to necessarily tell us, oh, can you put this feature in? We really want that feature. We'll take that information. But the goal of the beta is to make sure it does what we say it's to do. So all of the features that we have implemented, we're asking people to play with those features, work with them, make sure it does what it does, and let us know if there's a problem with those features. We were certainly going to work with users. We're not going to release the public beta on the 31st and release 4.0 on the 1st of June. We want feedback. We want to work with users and come up with the best, strongest, stablest product we can come up with.
What you're really asking people to do is not so much to give you further comment on what people want in there, but you want to make sure that what you have done actually works on the widest range of systems. But if there is a huge clamor for one particular, you know, minor enhancement or something, would you look at it, or is the feature set absolutely frozen?
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on the feature, but we have to draw a line somewhere, because people are already a little upset because we've slipped some dates on releasing this public beta. And again, it's because we get these requests and we think, boy, this is a great thing. Let's put it in. Well, it might take 2 days. It might take 3 weeks to put this extra feature in. So that just makes everything push down. So if at all possible, we'd like to draw the line. And in the README file, it will talk about some features that we still want to address that we haven't with the first public beta. So there are still issues we want to do, and hopefully those issues are what people want. But if not, again, please send those ideas to us, but don't be offended if they don't make the 4.0, because we've got to get the product out. We'll certainly dive into 4.1 or 5.0 or whatever as soon as it's out and start working on those, but we've got to draw a line for 4.0.
When do you expect to have the final product out there, the official 4.0?
Well, as I said, I'd like to have one, maybe two more betas, public betas of 4.0, and those probably being a month or so apart. So probably realistically somewhere in the September range, certainly before closing the gap, which is here in the United States in October. So certainly before that time, but our goal is to come out in September with the product.
Now, is there a particular kind of user to whom you would strongly suggest, hey, you know, don't install this beta, wait until the official version comes out, or would you recommend that everybody gets it?
Well, I do feel strongly enough that it is stable for anybody. But I would say if you're capable of making a backup directory of the WinEyes directory, then you're capable of installing, and you should probably run the demo or the beta. But if you're incapable of making a backup, then you may want to hold off a little bit in doing that, because if there is a problem and your job depends on WindowEyes running correctly, then you may want to stick with 3.1 for a while. You may want to just hold off a little bit and get the feedback after a lot of these diehards go in and dive in with this first public beta, just to make sure, although, again, I feel very comfortable, but if your job depends on something, don't go off and start putting all kind of beta software on your machine. You might want to feel it out a little bit and see what's going on.
Now, to enjoy the enhanced Internet Explorer access that we were talking about before, do I have to have IE 5.5 on my system, which is, of course, at this stage another beta?
That's a good question I should have mentioned before, because it is very important to kind of understand how this works. With 4.0, this beta that we're going to be putting out on May 31st, if you have Internet Explorer 5.5, you'll have everything that I've talked about. You'll have the speed improvements. Everything's just going to work great. If you still want to stick with 5.0 or 5.01, of Internet Explorer, and I would suggest you go to 5.01 if you can, because those are very similar. But if you have either of those two, we will have the speed improvements that I talked about if you're not running 256 colors. There was actually a bug that was found in the Internet Explorer 5.0 and 5.01 that comes out with WindowEyes, especially because of what we have to do to make those speed improvements. And it only happens if you're 256 colors. So when WindowEyes launches, it will look to see what version of Internet Explorer you're running and what color resolution you're in. If you're running 5.0 or 5.01 and you're in 256 colors, we'll revert back to the normal mode, which is what 3.1 uses now. But if you're running 16-bit color or if you're running IE5, then you'll be in the full fast version.
Okay, now you have cautioned very strongly, and some people haven't heeded this advice and regretted it, you've cautioned very strongly that people should not install IE5.5 and try and run it with Windows Eyes 3.1. In fact, I know of no screen reader on the market at all right now where installing IE5.5 doesn't create major nightmares. So presumably the order to do this in would be to install the public beta first on the 31st of May and then install IE5.5.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you may not be able to use IE5.5 to download the public beta of 4.0 on Windows Eyes. So absolutely, download the 4.0 beta first, install it, then go with IE5.5, and then things will work great for you there.
Will you be putting the URL in a README file or something to tell people where to go to get 5.5 of Internet Explorer?
Yes, the README file does go through and give you an exact URL of how to get the IE5.5. And again, we strongly encourage those people that can to go ahead and download that version.
Okay, well, that seems all very clear. Let's talk about upgrade prices. How much will Windows 4.0 cost?
Well, the nice thing is anybody that purchases Windows 3.1, which is what we're shipping today, anybody that purchased it on or after May 1st, up until the point of 4.0 release, will automatically receive the 4.0 free if they download the final version. If they want a CD of the 4.0, we're charging $20 for that. So basically, if you want it now, there's no reason to wait. You can get the 3.1, download the public beta, you're already using it. When the final version's out, you'll have access to that free of charge. Anybody that's running 3.0 or 3.1 of Windows Eyes and purchased before May 1st of 2000, the upgrade cost is $100. And if your prior versions to 3.0, you basically add what it would have cost to get you up to 3.0. So I think we charge $75 from 2.0 to go to 3.0, and then from 1.0 to go to 3.0 was $150. So add that to the $100, and that would give you the total price. So it's either $100 if you're a 3.0 user, it's $175 if you're a 2.0 user, or it's going from my brain here, $250 if you're a 1.0 user.
What about if you want to purchase the product from scratch, if you want to become a new Windows Eyes user?
That is $595.
How will people know when this beta is actually out? I mean, we know it's coming out on the 31st, but do people just keep checking a particular web page, or how does it work?
Well, certainly our web page will announce that it's been released, which is just www.gwmicro.com. But we'll also post messages off to the main GUI speak Blindel, some of the main blindness lists that are out there. We'll also post it to our two main lists, which are GW-Info and GW-News, which are just GW Micro-related lists. And if you're interested in subscribing to those lists, you can go to our webpage, go to the support link, and it will show you how you can actually log on to those lists, as well as some of the other main blindness lists that are out there. We give you the ability of being able to do all of those from our list.
It would probably be a good idea for people who want to provide you with feedback to actually subscribe to the GW Info list, at least during the beta cycle, I guess, because people will be comparing notes, and it's a good way for people to find out whether any problems that do arise are peculiar to one system or whether they're widespread.
Absolutely. I think that's crucial, that if you are going to be going with the beta, because if there are problems or if there's whatever, that's going to be discussed on that list. And I certainly anticipate the throughput of that list to increase May 31st, whenever the release actually comes out on that day, because there will be a lot of feedback from users, either saying good, bad, here's problems, here's suggestions, whatever. And it would be very, very helpful to not only the individual, but also to us, to be able to see this feedback and good and bad points of this beta.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the program during such a crucial stage of things, and we wish you all the very best of luck with the beta cycle to come. There'll be a few long days coming up for you, I'm sure.
Well, we hope not too long, but we're very excited about getting this out, and I do appreciate the opportunity to discuss it.
Now, I have a private beta of Windows Eyes 4.0 here, and as promised, we're going to put it through its paces now. Before we get into this part of the program, I'd like to make a couple of comments about what this review is and what it isn't. It is not a comparison of Windows Eyes versus any other screen reader. Actually, in my opinion, another dueling Windows session is certainly long overdue, But this program is not a blow-by-blow comparison. At times we will, of course, draw comparisons between what was in Windows 3.1 and what will be in 4.0. This simply takes you along with me as I explore this new beta. At the end of the review, I'll give you an overall impression of the product and make some comments. In looking at what we could cover on the program, reading the information that was supplied to me with this beta, it was a question of what can we afford to leave out, because we could be here for a long time. I'll get through as much of this as I can. There really is a lot new in version 4.0, particularly if you have access to a braille display, but there are other things as well. Now, as is my typical want to do, I have assigned Ctrl-Shift-W as my WindowEyes hotkey, so I'm going to launch that now. I have my DeckTalk Access 32 selected, and I also have the speech slowed right down, as I also try to do. I normally have it going at, you know, between 450 and 500 a minute. I don't think that's appropriate for this kind of program, so I've slowed it down, and I've also turned keyboard echo on, which I don't normally do either. Let's launch the program with Ctrl-Shift-W and see what happens.
WindowEyes 3.1.n.
Okay, now we're in version 3.1.n. When the public beta comes out, I don't know whether that version number will be the same or not, but that's the version that I have. And we'll bring up the WindowEyes control panel now. Things are pretty consistent. If you're a user of WindowEyes now, you won't have any problem using things. They haven't radically changed the interface or anything like that, so we'll do control backslash like we always have.
WindowEyes active WindowEyes 0.000 associated.
The first thing we should have a play with, I think, is the Braille display support. It's probably the most substantial change to WindowEyes. To get it going, we need to get to the File menu, so I'm going to hit Alt-F.
F. O equals open pull-down.
And I know that this option I'm looking for is towards the bottom of this menu, so to get there quickly, I'm going to start up-arrowing through it.
X equals exit. L equals load before startup on. B equals select Braille display. Dialogue.
And there it is, select Braille display. In WindowEyes, you'll hear the word dialogue when there's a dialogue on a menu. You also hear that now when you're tabbing and you get to a button. Let's say you're in a dialogue box and you might find a button there that would bring up another dialogue box. Instead of just saying dot, 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 WindowEyes will say dialogue. I'm going to hit enter on the select Braille display option.
Dialogue. Select Braille display. Graphic.
Okay, we're now in a list of Braille displays, and the top one is none, which is what's selected at the moment. Let's arrow down and find out what my options are in this list of Braille displays. This is very similar to the select synthesizer dialog.
Allow models 240, 280, 320, 340, 440, 2 of 17.
So we've got 17 options here, a whole bunch of alvas in that option.
Allow models 380, 480. Allow satellite 544. Allow satellite 570. Braille light 18. Sit. Braille light 40. Braille window. A. Braille note not supported yet. Braille XL models not supported yet. Braille X2D screen not supported yet. Braille X compact tiny 2D light not supported yet. Fan detect not supported yet. Navigator 204080. Power Braille 40. Fit. Power Braille 6580. Vario RPT 40 Rapid not supported yet. 17 of 17.
So that's your choices in terms of Braille displays. You'll hear that what they've chosen to do is give you the list that they will support in 4.0, and some of those have not been supported, at least for the beta that I have. I understand that the Vario Braille display, they now have that ready, so it could well be included in the public beta. I'm not sure about that. This is a list view, and I can therefore hit the first letter of my choice and get back to it. And I have a Braille Light 18, and I'll hit B, therefore.
3, Braille Light 18, 6 of 17.
We're right there. We'll tab now and find out what else is in this dialogue.
P equals ports. COM 1, 1 of 9, list box.
Now, you notice there are 9 in here. You would generally expect to have 8. And that's because in this list you've got your 4 COM ports, your 4 parallel ports or printer ports, but also you have the ability to run a Braille display from the USB, or Universal Serial Bus port. Some people will find that very useful. And that's what we have.
Okay. Button. Cancel. Button.
And now we're back in that list. Note that unlike the synthesizer dialogue, where you might be running a serial device, you can't change the baud rate. And in preparing for this part of the program, I got caught out a few times because I use my BrailleLite 18 a lot because I don't own a disk drive product for it. I just transfer material from my PC and back using Hyperterminal, the program that comes with Windows, although I have Hyperterminal Private Edition, which you can download for free off the web, and we should look at that sometime. I have my baud rate set to 38,400 baud, which is the fastest that the BrailleLite will go. And it only will work as a Braille display under WindowEyes if you set it to 9600, so be careful about that. If you use it for other things, you've got to go into the status menu of the BrailleLite and turn the baud rate down to 9600. I've done that, so I'm going to turn my BrailleLite on. I have the speech pretty much turned off all the time, and the BrailleLite ready has come up. I can now do a .345 chord to get to speech box mode. And then I'm going to press, it says set speech parameters on the display, so I'm going to push all six dots, and it says speech box mode on. And then I do a Z chord to exit, and I've got a nice blank Braille display. Now I can push enter, because I arrowed to BrailleLite 18, and enter, of course, activates the OK button.
WindowEyes active WindowEyes 0.000 associated.
And that has also come up on the BrailleLite 18 Braille display. Not all of it, though, because all of that won't fit on the 18-character display. And we'll have to configure ways of scrolling along through that text as we progress and learn about this new product. But we have contact, as they might say in somewhere like Houston, between WindowEyes and the Braille display. Nice and simple. And if you ever get to borrow a Braille display, or you need to change it for some reason, all the drivers are installed at all times, so you just arrow through and select the one that you want. So how do we configure this further? Well, let's tap the menu bar, because we're still on the WindowEyes control panel, and take a look.
F equals file pull down.
We're now going to right arrow through the menu bar at the top of the screen in the WindowEyes control panel. Incidentally, on my Braille display, it says MIP, which I guess would be menu interface pull down, and then all six Braille dots, which is the computer Braille symbol for equals, file. And actually, what's really interesting is that you then see the menu bar right across the top, except again, of course, we'd need to configure some scrolling keys for a small display like the 18, but I see file, screen, and the beginning of the keyboard menu across on my Braille display. And I'm going to right arrow now.
S equals screen pull down. A equals keyboard pull down. M equals mouse pull down. O equals hotkeys. C equals cursoring. Dialogue. G equals general pull down. B equals Braille pull down.
And here we are. We have a Braille menu. Let's just satisfy our curiosity by down arrowing first through all of these Braille options to see what's on this Braille menu.
S equals scrolling options. Dialogue. C equals control information. Dialogue. D equals dot patterns. Dialogue. T equals translation tables. Dialogue. H equals hotkeys. Dialogue. O equals options. Dialogue. G equals graphics. Dialogue. B equals Braille window.
Pretty interesting array of options there that we'll try and cover. I'll do the Braille window first, because it's probably the simplest thing to explain. It's currently set to off. It's one of those famous WindowEyes toggles where if you push enter, you'll turn it on. Well, it's actually not just a WindowEyes type of toggle. It's a pretty standard Windows menu feature with this kind of a toggle from a menu. What the Braille window appears to do is put a rectangle, I think, at the top of the screen. And in that rectangle, a sighted person can see the Braille as if they were looking at a Braille display. Now, I know from personal experience that some sighted people, I think sighted people generally, can sometimes find it difficult to see a Braille display because of the fact that some dots aren't completely down and things like that. Whereas when we run our fingers across them, they get pushed down. So this is good for instructors or people who need to troubleshoot for some reason. They can see what's coming up on the Braille display. And if they're getting into writing translation tables or doing other fancy configuration type things, that is, I guess, quite useful for debugging and making configuration, making set files, etc. So that's the Braille window. We certainly won't turn it on right now. So let's down arrow to get back to the top of this menu.
F equals scrolling options. Dialogue.
This brings up a dialogue, as WindowEyes tells us, if we hit enter, and we'll do that and just find out what's in here. you do need to know that some of these options are not working yet, and you'll need to read the README file that comes with the public beta to find out which ones are not implemented.
Dialogue. Braille scrolling options. Graphic. Graphic. Auto root caret. Checkbox. Unchecked.
Let's just tab through these.
F equals autofill line. Checkbox. Unchecked. W equals enable whole word mode. Checkbox. Unchecked. H equals horizontal scrolling. Scroll display width. Radio button. Checked. 1 of 2.
This is implemented, and it's the horizontal scrolling option. We've got two choices here. The first one that we're on now, effectively what happens is that if you're in a word processor, let's say, and you're control right arrowing, for example, through a document to move word by word, well, eventually your caret is going to scroll off the right-hand side of the braille display unless there was this sort of option here, and you certainly don't want your caret disappearing. So what this does is, if you choose this first option here, it always ensures that your caret, or your cursor, if you like, is on the left-hand side of the braille display. But the next option,
H equals horizontal scrolling, scroll specified width, radio button, checked,
says how many, or then you can tab and get this edit box.
Edit box, S equals scroll width, 1.
So that allows you to specify a width that the display will scroll when the caret would otherwise move off the braille display. So you've got a bit of flexibility with that. I'm actually quite comfortable with the default right now, so we'll just shift tab to get back to this radio button and up arrow.
H equals horizontal scrolling. Scroll display width. Radio button. Check.
That's fine. So I'm going to hit enter to choose the OK button. Those are all the options in that dialog.
Window eyes active, window eyes point 0.
So that's scrolling set up. Let's go back into the braille menu. Shortcut key is Alt B.
B. B equals braille pull down. S equals scrolling options.
And we'll down arrow one more time.
C equals control information. Dialogue.
Let's go in here.
Menu
by pushing
closed.
Enter to get into the control information
scroll
dialogue.
Information. M equals O equals information order. Type, name, data, radio button. Checked. 1 of 6.
This really allows you to specify your preference relating to how you like to see material represented. The default, for instance, in Window Eyes with the voice is to have the control spoken first and then the name of that control. So it will say button OK, button cancel, radio button yes, etc. I personally don't like that because I have the speech going so fast that I want to hear the name of the control first, followed by the kind of control it is, especially if I'm in a program that I'm familiar with. And WindowEyes allows you to do that already. But with the Braille options, they've given you an awesome amount of flexibility. Actually, let's just look at the options here.
O equals information order. Type, name, data, radio button. Checked. 1 of 6.
That is really the default for WindowEyes in the past with the voice. So on the Braille display, if you choose this option, you would be able to find out about the type of the control. In other words, whether it's a checkbox or a radio button, whatever it is, then you would have the name of the field or its label. So, for instance, if you have an edit box, it would say edit box username, and then it would have the field. So it might have edit box username Jonathan Mosen, for instance. Although the braille display abbreviates that, and we'll come to looking at that shortly. So that's pretty much standard WindowEyes behavior, but we can change that by arrowing through this list of 6 radio buttons.
O equals information order. Type, data, name, radio button. Checked.
This time you have the type, the data, and then the name. So it would say edit box, Jonathan Mosen, username.
O equals information order. Name, data, type, radio button. Checked. 3 of 6.
We would have username Jonathan Mosen, edit box. Let's arrow through and see what else we can do.
O equals information order. Name, type, data, radio button. Checked.
This is the option that I would personally go for. It would say username, edit box, Jonathan Mosen, and that's the way that I would personally prefer to see it.
O equals information order. Data, type, name, O equals information order. Data, name, type, radio button.
So you've got every conceivable combination of order there. Let's just arrow up to the way I like it, because it's my computer. So there.
O equals information order. Name, type, data.
And we'll tab to the next control in this dialog.
N equals include name. Checkbox. Checked.
So if you don't want to see the name of the control, and I'm not sure perhaps why you wouldn't, but you may not want that on the braille display, you can turn it off.
T equals include type. Checkbox. Checked.
If you're in a program where you're really familiar with it, you may not be interested in whether it's a radio button or an edit box or whatever, and those controls take valuable space on the braille display, so if you want, just go ahead and turn it off with the checkbox. You'd hit the space bar.
I equals include index. Checkbox. Unchecked.
This is allowing you on the braille display to read information about whether it's one of seven or whatever it is in a list. And you may want to see that in the braille or you may not. So there's your choice.
Edit box. S equals separator dot pattern. 123,456.
This is where you can specify what separates the information about the control from its contents. So, for example, you might have EB equals username, the equal sign being 123456 in computer braille. You can change that to any separator that you personally prefer. You might, for example, go for a dash, .36. You just type in the dot combination in this edit box.
C equals control types. Alt tab. 1 of 27. List box.
This is where you have a list of different types of controls. We can arrow through this list. So let's just briefly arrow through a little bit through this list of controls.
Button. 2. Checkbox checked. 3. Checkbox unchecked. 4. Of 27. Combo box. Custom control. Edit box.
We've been talking about edit boxes, so let's continue with that analogy. We now have edit box selected in the list, and I'm going to hit the tab key.
Edit box. O equals control type. Tab.
Now, that's where we can specify how we have the edit box control symbolized in the braille display. Currently, it's set to EB.
EB.
I'm just checking that that's the case. Indeed, it is. So whenever I see an edit box, it says EB. Indeed, that's what's on my braille display. If I lean over to my braille light here, it's saying EB equals, or those six dots, control type equals EB. So that's telling me that it's an edit box. Let's just shift tab again to get back into this list.
C equals.
And arrow down some more.
Group box.
Now, group box, for example. On the braille display right now, it's saying LB equals control type. Okay, so LB is clearly list box. Now, I'm going to tab.
Edit box. O equals control type. GR.
And it's telling me that whenever a group box appears, that my braille display will say GR. You can change all of this to anything you want. So if this doesn't seem intuitive, or you might for some reason want to reduce all of these to one letter abbreviations, so that it takes up less valuable braille space, you can do anything you want just by configuring this dialog.
Okay. Button.
And that's what that particular one does, allowing you to specify the order in which you see information in terms of the type of control, its label, and its data, and also how those controls are represented. So I'm going to hit enter to get out of here. Just in case I have inadvertently made changes.
Cancel.
I'm going to hit the cancel button.
Space. Window.
Let's go back to the braille menu with Alt B and continue our tour of the braille features.
Re equals braille pull down. S equals scrolling options. C equals control information. D equals dot patterns. Dialogue.
Let's take a look at the dot patterns dialogue box.
Menu closed. Dialogue.
And we'll now take a look at the options in this dialogue.
Edit box. C equals caret pattern. 78.
This tells us that the caret, or, you know, what we used to call the cursor in the old days, is going to be represented by dots 7 and 8. Which is pretty standard. That's how the Braille light, for instance, represents the cursor when I'm in its own software.
Caret pattern. Blinking. Radio button. Checked. 3 of 3.
Now, blinking is the currently selected option, and that's indeed what it's doing. As I lean over here to feel what's happening on the Braille lights, dots 7 and 8 are going up and down, up and down. It's actually quite soporific in a funny kind of way. Let me up arrow, because we're on a radio button that is 3 of 3.
Caret pattern. R was down. Radio button. Checked. 2 of 3.
That means that the caret is, I guess, turned off because it's always down.
Caret pattern. R was up. Radio button. Checked. 1 of 3.
That way it's always up. That would be how the Braille light users would be used to it. I actually quite like it blinking, so I'll just arrow down to the default.
There is pattern. Blinking. Edit box. Blink rate. 500.
That blink rate is set to 500. That's set in milliseconds. 500 milliseconds equals half a second, so it's going to go up and down every half a second. If you want to change that, just change the field in the edit box.
Edit box. M equals mouse pattern. 78.
This allows you to distinguish the carrot from the mouse if you want to do that, so you're absolutely clear what you're manipulating, whether it's the mouse pointer or the carrot.
Mouse loop pattern. Blinking. Radio button.
So same options, really, as the carrot that we've just looked at.
Edit box. Blink rate. 500. Edit box. Re equals both pattern. 12.
Now this is dots 1, 2 to indicate when material is bolded, if you want to know that information.
Edit box. H equals highlight pattern. 125.
That makes sense. B for bold, dots 1, 2. H for highlight, dots 1, 2, 5.
Edit box. I equals italic pattern. 24.
Dots 2, 4. I for italic.
Edit box. S equals strikeout pattern. 234.
And again, pretty sensible. Dots 2, 3, 4 for strikeout.
Edit box. U equals underline pattern. 136. OK. Button.
And we'll hit enter to get out of this dialog.
Window eyes back.
That is how you configure how cursors are represented on the screen and how different types of formatting is identified to you if you choose through other options to have it identified. We'll go back to the Braille menu.
Re equals Braille pull-down. S equals scrolling. C equals control information. D equals dot patterns. T equals translation tables. Dialogue.
We won't go into the translation tables right now because of time constraints, and there are other things that I want to show you, both in terms of the Braille display support and other things. But it is a very powerful feature, and it's easy to use. Essentially, you can customize your own code if you want to. You can tell Window Eyes to represent any character on the screen with any symbol you want. So if you think that the letter G should be represented as, I don't know, dots 2, 3, 4, 6, you can tell it that that's what you want to do. It's great, as Doug was saying in the interview, for languages. It will only, as he said, substitute one character for another character. You can't substitute a string with a character, at least at this stage, and therefore it's not a way of writing your own grade 2 support for Window Eyes at this stage. But it will be handy for languages, and as Doug said, people are already onto this. It's a similar dialogue-type interface that Window Eyes has really made famous in terms of configurability, and you'll be able to have a look at that when you try the public beta.
H equals hotkeys. Dialogue.
This is where the fun really starts, folks. So we're going to hit enter to get into the hotkeys dialogue.
Menu closed. Dialogue.
What I'm in now is a list view.
No selected item.
With
list box.
Nothing in it. My understanding is that when 4.0 is actually released, there will be some defaults in here. But right now, you can be as inventive as you like, and who knows? I'm sure there'll be some discussion on the GW info list about what appropriate defaults should be for different Braille displays. So my Braille display is simply saying LB, right at the left of the Braille display for list box. Let's tab through and see what we can do in here.
C equals capture Braille key. Button.
Well, that's a good start. You'll note that one of the comments I made was that a lot of this text is not appearing on the Braille display because I've only got 18 cells with the Braille Light 18, and that won't hold a lot. So what I really want to be able to do is to scroll my Braille display so I can read the entire line. To start that process off, I'm going to hit the spacebar over this capture Braille key, or I could just hit Alt-C, but I'm going to hit the spacebar because I've tabbed to the control.
Space. Press a Braille key.
It says press a Braille key, so I lean over to my Braille Light 18, and what I figure is that I should use the advance bar, the right-hand end of the advance bar on my Braille Light 18, because that's how I would normally advance the display if I was reading anywhere else. So I'm going to try tapping the right end of my advance bar and see if Window Eyes recognizes that.
B8, 1, of 1.
Well, it says B8, which doesn't mean a lot to me, but it obviously means something to the Window Eyes program. So on my Braille display now, I have LB equals B8, which tells me that it's a list box and that B8 is the key in the list, the only one in the list, actually, that we're now focused on. Let's tab through the dialog and see what I can do in order to assign something to that particular key now.
C equals capture braille key. Button. F equals key function. Scroll down arrow. Combo box.
What this will do is tell me what functions are already assigned to this key. As I down arrow through.
Scroll down arrow. Combo box.
There's nothing right now. And on my braille display, incidentally, I have CB equals key function. And that's about it. I think I see an S there, which probably means it would say scroll down arrow if it had the room. But of course, because I haven't defined a key to scroll the display, I can't tell that, because that's what we're in the process of doing. So let's continue to tab.
H equals assign hotkey. Dialog. Button.
That sounds promising. I want to assign a hotkey to this function. Hotkey in this context is exactly the same as the WindowEyes hotkeys have always meant, but of course, we will have some extra options now that Braille is introduced, and very sensibly, those Braille functions are at the top of the list once we bring up this dialog, because we're assigning a Braille key. So let's hit the space bar to bring up this hotkey dialog.
Space. Dialog. Execute hotkey. Graphic. S equals keys. Rotor Braille tracking. Graphic.
Okay, we're on rotor Braille tracking now. That doesn't sound like what I want, so let's keep arrowing down.
Rotor Braille tracking. Rotor graphic dictionary mode. Prior Braille line. Next Braille line. 4 of 100.
Although that could be what I want, I think there's a better option. Bear in mind that I'm no expert on this WindowEyes beta. I've just got a copy and I'm showing you what I've found with it.
Scroll Braille left. 5. Scroll Braille right. 6 of 177.
177 options here, but option 6 seems like the one. Scroll Braille right. So I'm going to hit the Enter key, which is effectively the OK button. That's what we have.
OK. Cancel. S equals.
That's all we have in this. We've got the list of hotkeys, an OK button, and a cancel button. So I'm going to hit Enter, which is the OK button.
Dialog. Braille hotkeys. Graphic.
Now, being the curious person that I am, I actually want to get out of here and find out whether this key works before I start assigning other keys all over the place. We've got to click the OK button to apply these changes and get out of this dialog, because like the cursoring and hotkey dialogs that we're used to in WindowEyes, they don't take effect until you click the OK button, and that's sensible. So I'm just going to tab around here.
C equals capture braille key. F equals key function. H equals assign hotkey. K equals assign keystroke. Button.
We'll come back to that later.
E equals clear entry. L equals clear key. D equals delete key. OK. Button.
There's the OK button. I'm going to hit Enter.
WindowEyes active WindowEyes 0.000 associated.
Now, on my Braille Light 18, my little 18-cell display, I see WindowEyes and then an open parenthesis and then active without an E, because at that point my display is full. I'm going to tap the right-hand end of the advanced bar, which we just assigned, to scroll Braille right. Now I have the E from active, and it says E colon, because we've got the end of active, WinEyes.000, and then ASS for associated. I'll tap the advanced bar again, the right-hand end, and I've got the rest of the prompt. Associated, none, right parenthesis. So that has worked. By simply doing that menu hotkey thing, I have assigned the right-hand end of the advanced bar to scroll my Braille display. Now the Braille display is starting to become very useful indeed. Now that we've verified that this hotkey system actually does what it's supposed to do, we can go ahead and assign, hopefully, the left-hand end of the advanced bar to scroll the Braille line left to complete this particular operation. So let's go Alt-B for the Braille menu, and H for hotkeys, and just tab here.
C equals capture Braille key button.
And we'll hit spacebar on the capture Braille key button.
Space. Press the Braille key.
That'll be interesting to see whether, when I press the left-hand end of the advanced bar, it recognizes it as a different key. I would imagine it will.
3-1, 3-2, 3-8.
Yes, well, it says B1, B2, B8, which is obviously something mysterious to WindowEyes. That's fine. We'll now tab away.
C, F equals key function. Scroll down arrow. H equals assign hotkey.
We'll push space to assign the hotkey. Remember, this is a button, and space will activate the button and put us in the assign hotkey dialog.
Space. Dialog.
And we'll just arrow through the options.
Rotor Braille tracking. Rotor graphic dictionary. Prior Braille line. Next Braille line. Scroll Braille left. 5.
That's the one we want, so we'll hit Enter.
Dialog. Braille hotkeys.
Now, you can assign other functions. You don't just have to have one function. But we'll just go to the OK button.
C, F, E, H, A, E equals, L equals, D, E, OK, button.
And hit space.
Space.
Now, I've got WindowEyes active on my display again. I'll push the right hand into the advanced bar, and I've got the next line, WindowEyes.000, and then ASS, starting the associated. I'll push the left hand into the advanced bar, and I'm back. Yes, it does work. So we've assigned the advanced bar to something useful. We can also assign any standard WindowEyes hotkey. For example, it might be quite useful at this point, because we are going to have a look at Internet Explorer shortly, to assign the letter A to a quick toggle for turning MSAA mode on. So to do that, I can just go back into the Braille menu without B and H for hotkeys, and then
C equals capture Braille key.
Choose this capture Braille key.
Space. Press a Braille key.
And I'm just going to hit the A, the dot one, on my Braille light.
B1.
I'm quite interested in that labeling sequence. I have no idea what it actually means, but I'm sure there's a method to it. Maybe B1 means that it's Braille dot one. But I'm only guessing. I suppose we could work that out by pushing a dot two and trying to assign that to something, and it would probably say B2, I suspect. But I'm just a mere reviewer. We will now tab away to
H equals assign hotkey.
Assign hotkey. We could also, of course, push Alt H to get in there, I guess.
Space. Dialog. Execute hotkey. Graphic. S equals keys.
And this is a list list view control, which means that we can hit the first couple of letters, or even three if we need to get to the control we want. I'm going to hit MS.
S. MSAA application mode title. 171 of 177.
Yes, well, it's just as well I did do that, isn't it? Because you don't want to have to arrow down 171 times. So now we're straight on to the MSAA application toggle. That's the hotkey we want. We will hit enter.
Dialog.
And we've assigned that. We'll test that later. So we can go ahead and keep assigning these keys in this dialog. What we can also do is assign an actual key press to a key. Now let's demonstrate that.
C equals capture Braille key. Button.
And we'll hit the space bar.
Space. Press a Braille key.
And
not a Braille key.
Oh yes, fair enough. I just tap the control key. That's a fair warning. Once you're in that press a Braille key dialog, don't do anything else except press a Braille key.
F equals.
Hang on.
C equals
so now we're still
Braille
on capture Braille key. I'll hit space.
Space. Press a Braille key.
Alright. Now I will use the Braille light key for next line as if I was reading in a document. That would be a dot four chord. So I'm going to hit a dot four chord.
S equals keys. B4, B9. 4 of 4. List box.
And a B4, B9 is the assignment. It's given that key. Now we'll tab through.
C equals capture breath. F equals key. H equals assign. K equals assign keystroke. Button.
Assign keystroke. Now, if I was reading in the Braille light, effectively a dot four chord would take me to the next line, like a down arrow key on a standard computer. So I'm going to hit the space bar over this assign key button.
Space. Press a key.
And it says press a key. So I'm just going to hit the down arrow key.
S equals keys. B4, B9.
And it's done it. We hope. So now let's go to the capture key again.
C equals capture Braille key. Button.
And I can hit that space bar.
Press a Braille
it says
key.
Press a Braille key. I can do a dot one chord, which on the Braille light will take me to the previous line.
S equals keys.
And tab over.
F equals scroll down arrow. K E equals clear and K equals assign keystroke. Button.
And assign the keystroke.
Press
of
a
course,
key.
It would be up arrow.
Dialog.
So we now have some keys assigned. I'm going to hit OK.
Cancel.
Just tab to OK. Okay.
WindowEyes.
And let's now put those keys into action. That's a brief look at the hotkeys. Let's just take a brief tour through the other options in Braille.
H equals hotkeys. O equals options. Dialog.
We have an options dialog. I think options dialogs are some of the most fun things in any program. So let's go in there and have a look.
Menu closed. Dialog. Braille options. Graphic.
And we'll find out what the first one is.
A equals 8.Braille. Checkbox. Checked.
If you don't like 8.Braille, some people don't, you can uncheck it and not have 8.Braille.
E equals enable quick message mode. Checkbox. Checked.
Well, the README file told me that quick message mode isn't functional. Didn't tell me what it was going to do, just that it's not functional, so I can't tell you what that will do.
S equals spacing. Collapse extra spacing. Radio button. Checked.
This is
one
a nice feature, particularly if you have a Braille Light 18 or some smaller Braille display. If layout's not too important to you, you can collapse any extra spacing. That doesn't mean that it's going to get rid of any spaces that you've actually legitimately put in as space characters. They'll still be there, but if there's any kind of, I guess, indentation or some sort of extra spacing in that line, it will get rid of it. The other option...
S equals spacing. Show extra spacing. Radius.
Is to show extra spacing, so I'll up arrow again and leave it at its default.
A equals attribute marking. Highlight. Radial button. Checked. 2 of 7.
You can have any of these attribute marks turned on. Let's go through the options. It's currently at 2 of 7, which is highlighting, to show you when something is highlighted.
A equals attribute marking. Bold. A equals attribute marking. Underline. A equals attribute marking. Italic. A equals attribute marking. Strikeout. A equals attribute marking. All. Radial button.
So if you want to see all attributes, you can turn that on.
A equals attribute marking. None. Radial button.
Or none.
Check. A equals attribute marking. Highlight.
And we're back to the beginning of that list of radio buttons.
Okay. Button.
And that's the options. So
space.
Hit space over the OK button to get out. Now let's go back to the Braille menu because there's one option we haven't covered.
B equals Braille pull down. C equals control and D equals dot pattern. T equals translation. H equals hotkeys. O equals options. G equals graphics. Dialog. Menu close.
We'll get into on the graphics
dialogue
option and we'll see what we've got here.
B equals verbosity. Braille, speech or graphic. 6 of 6.
Let's go through these radio buttons.
Braille or graphic. 5 of 6. Graphic only. 4 of 6. Braille or speech only. 3 of 6. Braille only. 2 of 6.
And?
None. 1 of 6.
Now to understand these options, it's important to mention that with Windows 4.0, the graphic dictionary system has changed so that you can give 2 labels to a graphic. Now by this I mean that if you find a program where it's necessary for you to label a graphic, you bring up a graphics dictionary, this is standard in pretty much any screen reader, and you give it a name. You give it a name that's familiar. Well, what Windows has done is realize that you may want to give a different name to the Braille version of the graphic for space reasons. I'm just trying to think of an example off the top of my head. Let's say you might want, if you're in a CD ripping program that you're using with the mouse or whatever, to have it say play when you go to the play button. But in Braille, you may just want PL because that will be clear enough for you. You can do both. You can say when I arrow through this, if I find a graphic, I want it to say play with the synthesizer, but I want it to display PL with the Braille display, so you've got a choice there. So this set of radio buttons controls exactly how WindowEyes deals with this. When we're on option 1 here, which is none, no graphics are displayed.
Braille only. 2.
When we are on the second one, only Braille graphics are displayed. In other words, graphics that you've given a Braille label to are displayed. By choosing this option, then it means that if there are some graphics that you don't want the Braille display to bother with, whereas you do want the synthesizer to bother with, this is how you'd set it up.
Braille or speech only. 3 of 6.
This is where the Braille display will show you graphics that have been given a Braille representation or a speech representation. So if there is a Braille representation in the dictionary for a particular graphic, you'll see that on the Braille display. But if there's only a speech one, you'll see that instead.
Graphic only. 4 of 6.
All this will do is ignore anything in the graphic dictionary and merely display everything as graphic.
Braille or graphic. 5 of 6.
In this case, you would see either the Braille representation or the word graphic, but any speech definitions in the graphic dictionary would be ignored on the Braille display.
Braille, speech, or graphic. 6 of 6.
And here you have Braille, speech, or graphic. In other words, if there's a Braille definition, a speech definition, it will read that. If there's a graphic, it will just read graphic. So that's quite useful if you are in a new application and you want to see where all the graphics are. Let's tab away and see what the next option is.
Edit box. G equals graphic symbol. 1245.
This is where you can specify exactly what the graphic symbol is. Now, the deck talk saying 1245, what that means is it's dots 1, 2, 4, and 5, that's the letter G. You might find that confusing. You may well want to assign something with dots 7 and 8 in it to make it a bit clearer. But whatever, if you're happy with the G, leave it the way it is. If you want the graphic symbol to be something else, go ahead and change it.
S equals use separator. Checkbox. Checked.
This is where you're looking at the equals symbol. If you want to use that separator, then you can leave that as it is. If you don't, you uncheck it.
Okay. Run.
And that's the options.
Save.
So, I'm by no means an expert. It's very possible that I've got some things wrong with this braille display stuff, but that's as I understand some of the options to be. There's a lot more power that I won't have time to show you, but hopefully when you get the public beta, you'll know enough, having listened to this, to get up and running pretty quickly. Play with your own definitions. I think it'll be very interesting to monitor the GW Info list and see what people find works best in terms of key assignments for different Braille devices, such as the Blazy note takers and displays and other things. And I think that although it may be considered a bit user-unfriendly, and maybe the public beta could have waited until there were some defaults in here, the other advantage is that there's going to be a lot of feedback from the WindowWise user community that I expect will influence the default. So the fact that there are none may well, in terms of hotkeys, may well result in some criticism of GW Micro, but I guess it's a personal preference thing, and I know they have been under pressure to release this thing. So I guess they are damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, and such is the life of a software developer. Let's now look at the next big thing, which I guess I would have to say is the Internet Explorer version 5.5 support. And I have loaded Internet Explorer version 5.5 on here. What I want to do, though, is I've just downloaded the homepage of Jamal Masri's Empowerment Zone. And I don't know what screen reader developers would ever do if Jamal decided that he was going to segment his page into lots of little pages, because in all of the different conferences and demonstrations that screen reader developers do, they all use Jamal's page to try and demonstrate how fast their screen readers are. It's huge. In fact, I'm just going to go into Windows Explorer. For those of you who are not users of WindowWise, one feature that I have always been very loudly applauding of in WindowWise is the way that it queries the controls in list views, such as those in Windows Explorer directly. To show you what I mean, I'm going to tab into the list view of Internet Explorer.
Three flapia.
And just down arrow to the hard disk.
Neutral Z. Local disk. 26.5 GB. 7.71 GB. 2.
And that's really nice, because it immediately tells you how much disk space you've got without any fooling around with any other keys. I hit Enter to go into my drive C, and I hit DO to get into my download directory.
Oh, download.
And push Enter. Now, I have actually saved Jamal's homepage to my hard disk, and the reason why I've done that is because I want to demonstrate how fast WindowWise loads it, and I don't want it to be affected by any internet connection speed issues. Bear in mind that when you have a big page like Jamal's, and we'll find out how big it is in a minute, it's going to take a while to download, especially if you're on a modem. So don't think that that's a screen reader issue. That's because a page like Jamal's is obviously at the very extreme end of the spectrum. It's huge, and it will take time. It's also got a lot of links, which means that modes like WindowWise's MSAA mode will take a while to process it in most cases. I saved it as empower.html, so I'm just going to hit EM.
M. Emacs 12.01.NURGE.RPM.
There we go. There's Emacs speak that I haven't yet installed. You see, I'm not totally closed-minded about Linux. I've had it here to try for a wee while now.
Empower.html. 190kb.
Now, that is a 190k web page. That is exceptionally large. That's 190k of text. So let's go into Internet Explorer. I'm going to close down Windows Explorer and hit my hotkey for Internet Explorer 5.5, which is Control-Alt-I. And it's doing its thing now. This one does seem to take a bit longer to launch, actually, compared with 5.01. And I don't know whether it's because they've got
loading page.
Checking
loading
for an
page.
Update there.
Load done.
Now, I'm now going to open this web page with a heck of a lot of links and nearly 200k basically worth of text, and we'll see how long it lasts. You can try this. If you have WindowWise 3.1 on your system, go to www.empowermentzone.com, all one word, and see how long it takes to load. Now, I'm going to do a Control-O for open file in Internet Explorer, and I'm going to do backslash download, backslash empower
.html. H-M.
I did an error there, or backspace.
H-T-M-L.
And then we're going to hit enter, and bear in mind this is now stored locally on the hard disk, so we're going to find out exactly how long WindowEyes will take to process this page. Here we go.
Combo. Edit box. About blank Microsoft Internet Explorer. Loading page. Load done.
And there it is. The whole thing is loaded. Not too bad. That's a substantial increase. Unfortunately, I don't have WindowEyes 3.1 to show you exactly how much of a difference it is, but it's, you know, really substantial. It was very slow on that page before. So that's the first thing you will notice, a significant speed increase. And in fact, when I have the DeckTalk set to this speed, the loading page and load done messages actually slow it down, because even before it's finished saying loading page, it's generally loaded something. Now, you'll remember that when we were in the hotkeys dialog for Braille, by the way, I had assigned .1 to turning MSAA mode on and off. So let's see if that's stuck. What I have on the Braille display is the word top with the carrot blinking over the letter T. I'm just going to hit .1 on my Braille light now.
MSAA mode off.
And there we go. It's turned MSAA mode off. I hit .1 again, and we'll have it load this page just in case you didn't believe me the first time.
MSAA mode on. Loading page. Load done.
Here we go.
Empowerment zone.
190k of empowerment zone loaded. One thing I immediately noticed about WindowEyes 4.0 when I started playing with it was how much more customizable it is in terms of the way it can behave on the internet. And to demonstrate some of these features, I want to take you somewhere where there's a very, very large form. And in doing this, I have to say, in all fairness to WindowEyes, that this is not typical of the way WindowEyes behaves with forms. In fact, it is important to say that I think pretty much all screen readers, if they have a special mode, whether it be a forms mode or an MSAA mode, you would have to turn it on and off to fill in this form. That's simply because of the sheer number of checkboxes and edit fields and things that are necessary on a very large, complex form like this. So in my testing of this, I have found that going to most regular forms, WindowEyes gives excellent results. It speaks the labels of most radio buttons, checkboxes, and edit fields just absolutely fine. But you will occasionally come across a really large form, which is what we're doing in this case, or a poorly designed form, which is certainly not what we're doing in this case. But in either way, you may need to turn on your MSAA mode and turn it off again to just actually get in context what the checkboxes and things apply to. So I'm referring to the fantastic job that Erlene Hughes has done with this ACB pre-registration form for the 2000 convention.
Combo. Edit box.
Control O to open this, and we'll do www.acb.org. And hit enter.
Empowerment Zone, helping individuals and communities achieve self-actualization and fulfill Microsoft Internet Explorer. Empowerment Zone, helping individuals and communities achieve self-actualization and fulfill Microsoft Internet Explorer.
You see, that's quite quick. I hope they deal with some of the kind of verbosity, because the only way to really stop that from happening, the title of the page being repeated a few times, is to hit the control key when the page is loading. So that may be something they're able to tidy up in the beta cycle. Now let's just tab through the links until we find this form. We'll see if the page that we want is on this common list of links.
ICB home link. About ICB Washington connection VIP. Braille forum visit. Affiliates link. ICB job bank link. Resources link.
If you're wondering why it's saying ICB, it's because I had to change a definition of the letter A for a synthesizer that I normally use, the Keynote Gold, and it conflicts with the DeckTalk. It gives a completely different result.
Convention information link.
Now, that's probably it.
Speeches link.
Yep, I expect convention information is the one. So hit enter.
Loading page. Load done. Skip navigation.
And we'll just hit an insert alt down arrow to get past this common
insert
set of links.
Border.
There we go.
ICB home link. ICB logo. 2000 convention information link. Convention scope 2000 link. Read these instructions if you are using a screen reader link. Register online for the 2000 ICB convention link.
Okay, let's do that. And we'll see how we get on with this form.
Loading page. Load done. American Council of the Blind. 39th National Convention. July 1, 2000. Loading page. Load done. American Council of the Blind. 39th National Convention, July 1, 2000. Online pre-registration form. One form per person. Please read convention scope carefully before continuing. Be sure to read the special instructions.
Alright, let's just tab and see what we're getting here.
Edit box.
Now we're in an edit box, so we know we're at the beginning of the form, so I'm going to press enter to turn MSAA mode off.
MSA mode off. Phone. Edit box.
Okay, I've got the second edit box.
Name.
Because if I shift tab, we've got the name one there. So it's speaking the form fine. I'm not going to fill this in, but I want to demonstrate some of the features by just moving down this form a little more.
Phone. Edit box.
And incidentally, on the brow display, I have EB equals phone, colon. And then another separator symbol, the equals, and the caret right after the equals blinking. So that tells me that my caret's in the right place in the field for me to enter my phone number.
Street address. Edit box. City. Edit box. State. Edit box.
I'm just tabbing through the form fields.
Zip code. Edit box. Email address. Edit box. Checkbox. Unchecked.
Now we have a checkbox unchecked, which WindowWise doesn't seek to speak the label of. What we can do is turn MSAA back on again.
MSA mode on. Loading page. Looking for visible line. Visible line found. Load done. Braille. Checkbox unchecked.
And we can just up arrow to get the context.
Large print. Program preference.
Okay, so it says program preference, and we've got
large print.
Large print.
Checkbox unchecked.
And then the checkbox for that. I'm just actually now going through the different options by down arrowing.
Braille. Checkbox unchecked.
Now, I would like a Braille program, assuming that I was actually filling in this form for real, which I'm not right now. I'm going to hit enter to do two things that will check the checkbox and also turn MSAA mode back off.
MSA mode off. Checkbox. Checked.
Now.
Checkbox. Checked.
Because WindowWise isn't speaking
checkbox. Unchecked.
The names of these checkboxes, I'm going to turn MSAA mode back on again.
MSA mode on. Loading page. Looking for visible line. Visible line found. Load done.
Now, here's where you can find that that's pretty tiresome, right? You get loading page, looking for visible line, and load done, and all sorts of stuff. This is where we can show you how things can be drastically improved with a new feature called the MSAA verbosity dialog. How you would set this up depends on how your global preferences are set up. You can choose, of course, as you have been able to for some time in WindowWise, to set your global settings to voice, voice and verbosity, and I think off from memory. So I have mine set to voice and verbosity. So I'm going to go into the Windows Control Panel.
WindowWise active IE.000, associated IE.000.
And I'm going to do an Alt-L for the global menu.
L equals global pull-down. G equals global.
And we'll just push V for verbosity.
V equals verbosity pull-down.
And I can do an up arrow.
S equals MSAA.
This
dialogue.
Is a new feature in 4.0, the MSAA verbosity dialog.
Dialogue. MSAA verbosity settings. Graphic. Graphic. Identify MSAA controls. Checkbox. Unchecked.
This checkbox, if you turn it on, every time you see a control that is MSAA, Active Accessibility, it will tell you that. Generally, I'm not sure why you would want to know that, so it's unchecked by default, and we will leave it that way.
A equals announce progress. Checkbox. Checked.
This is one that's of particular interest right now, because if we don't want all the loading page, load done, looking for visible line stuff, we can uncheck this. So we can do that right now.
Space. Unchecked.
And we'll show you the effect of that shortly. Let's tab.
V equals identify visited links. Checkbox. Checked.
Some people love the visited links feature. For others, it gets on their nerves. And you can now turn off the identification of visited links by unchecking this box, by choosing the spacebar, or pressing the spacebar.
L equals identify links during read to end. Checkbox. Check.
If you are reading a document and you're not particularly interested in hearing the word link when you're reading a web page from beginning to end, uncheck this box and you won't hear the word link as you read a document. If you arrow through the document, you'll still hear links, and obviously if you tab, you'll still hear the word link as well, but when you're using read to end, you won't.
R equals read entire page when load complete. Checkbox. Unchecked.
You may recall if you've been with WindowEyes for a long time that on the GW info list when MSAA mode was first developed, it used to load the page and read it all. And some people actually found that a bit of a bother because it kind of went into read-to-end mode and people didn't know what it was doing and they didn't realize they had to hit escape to stop it. And now it's an option. If you want the entire page to start reading as soon as you load it, you can turn that on.
Edit box. E equals next text minimum length. 0.
WindowEyes was the first screen reader that I'm aware of to introduce the ability to skip past the common list of links at the top of the page. In version 3.1, what it does is take you to the next non-linked portion of text. So on some pages, it doesn't work as well as it might. For instance, you might have a list of common links at the top that have a little bit of a text description after each link. You might have a link that says news and then, let's say for example, get the latest news from Reuters, and then another link that says sport, and then a text description that says the latest sports news from at home and abroad or whatever. Now, because that is not linked, that description, WindowEyes would only take you to that point. These new features get around that, and it is similar to features that are available elsewhere in other screen readers. Now, you can, in this edit box, define how large the block of non-linked text has to be before WindowEyes takes any notice of it. I found that a good length is around about 30 characters, so I'm going to set it to 30 right now.
30.
And hit tab.
Edit box. X equals next text consecutive. 1.
This is interesting because what we've done with that first edit box is say we need to have a non-linked text string of 30 characters before insert alt down arrow will take me past the links, so, you know, consider it to be past the links. Here we can also specify, well, how many lines of text does there have to be? And I might set that to 2.
2.
So that's that should really get past any text that is part of the common links at the top of a page that can so often be so annoying.
Okay. But
and that is the MSAA verbosity dialog. So we'll get back into Internet Explorer.
American Council of the Blind.
And what effect has all this had? Well, let's just go through here and find something else to fool around with.
To assist the tour planning committee, please provide the following. I have no usable travel vision. Checkbox unchecked.
Well, that's what I would personally check. So I'm going to hit Enter to check that, turn MSAA mode off, and also check this box that I've just arrowed to.
MSA mode off. Checkbox. Checked.
Now we want to keep filling in this form, and I'm going to turn MSAA mode back on. Now that we've made these changes to the verbosity dialog, listen to what happens.
MSA mode on. I am sighted. Checkbox unchecked.
Right, so we've got none of that loading page load done, looking for visible line stuff. We're straight on to the next field.
Checkbox unchecked. I have usable travel vision. Checkbox unchecked. I plan to use a guide dog. Checkbox unchecked.
Well, let's just say that if I were able to take my dog all that way, I would. And I'm going to hit the Enter key now to check this box.
MSA mode off. Checkbox. Checked.
Now we turn it back on again.
MSA mode on. I use a wheelchair hand. Checked.
So it's much quicker with all of those loading page messages off. Let's go to the CNN website now. And I think we'll go there because it can demonstrate a number of these new features in WindowEyes in terms of the way I've just set up the MSAA verbosity dialog. So, let's do a Control-O to open this
combo. Edit box.
Website, and we'll just type cnn.com. I'm going to just tap the Control key to stop all the verbiage. And cnn.com is loading. This is quite
click
a bit.
Here link. Add info link.
Now,
click
no
here link.
Loading
video
page
link.
Load done. It's
cancel
just
like
immediately starting to read the text. Now, if I do an insert alt down arrow, if I've got the mixture right, and that's entirely my issue if I haven't, then we should get to the first story.
A new and dangerous computer virus that spreads through email systems strike Friday.
Yep, and it's done it. It's taken us to the first headline, just past the link, which was
FBI warns of dangerous new email virus link.
And just to prove that that was indeed the first story link, we'll just back tab one more time.
More services link.
Yeah, and we've got more services, which is the last link in the common links at the top of the page. So it works very well. Well, let's try something that we've been to before. which people enjoyed. Let's go to the City Search site and do a search, because I want to show you something else that's very good that WindowEyes has addressed in this release. So we'll go to www.city-search.com. Rather than hanging around CNN, we'll find a form on here, I'm sure.
WELCOMPTOSETISERCH. SETI. Search Engine Technology Interface. Version 3.0.
Now, we can do a Control Alt down arrow to get to the first form field on the page.
Edit box, search the web for.
And, nice and simple, search the web for. We hit Enter.
MSN mode off. Search the web for. Edit box.
And, let's try, I'll put in quotes.
Quote.
Baby.
Free what space?
Names.
S. Quote.
Man, am I pleased I don't have to worry about that anymore. Hit the Tab key.
Alta Vista. Scroll down arrow.
Here we are with a nice combo box we can arrow down. And the good thing is, by the way, that the combo box issue that many people found so tiresome in WindowEyes 3.1, which I think was due to a problem with IE5, has been fixed. This is where if you tried to hit enter on a combo box, it did not retain focus. It appears to be working fine now.
AllRecipes.com.
I'm just arrowing down.
OL search. Dictionary.com. Discovery health. Excite. Google.com. Scroll down arrow.
I'll try that one, actually. I like that one.
Search now. Button.
And we'll hit enter. Now, what would normally happen is, of course, with WindowEyes 3.1, you would have to turn MSAA mode back on. But if I hit enter here, it's doing its search. And look, already it's come back. And MSAA mode is on. I can now down arrow.
Google.com. NEXT links.
So it's a very, very fast system. Obviously, it will depend on the speed of the web page loading. You can turn off all the verbiage, and you're back in MSAA mode. I think that will make a huge difference to new users who always found it a bit confusing that they had to go in and out of MSAA mode.
Search button.
But in any case, that's how the Internet Explorer support works. It's considerably faster, and it seems to work a lot more reliably on a number of sites. There are a few miscellaneous features that we haven't covered. Well, there are a lot of things we haven't covered, actually, but I did mention the system tray in the interview with Doug. I've got 10 items running in my system tray right now. I can just do an insert S.
Scanning system.
F equals file pull down.
Dialog. System tray. Graphic.
Test well, I'm
schedule.
Not quite sure how that F equals file came into it, but nevertheless, we have that. You heard the task scheduler was ready. It's there. It was very quick.
Task scheduler is ready. 1 of 10.
So that's nice. Because of that, they've actually taken away the recalculate button. I guess because it's just so jolly quick to bring up this list. So that is a big improvement in terms of speed. There's another nice feature that I think will be quite useful for when you're trying to debug set files. So let's say that you are putting something together quite complicated that loads a whole range of set files. You can now go into the global menu. We'll do that. We'll bring up the WindowEyes control panel and up arrow through the global menu.
U equals use clip. X equals maximum graphic. I equals minimum graphic. C equals caret link. O equals show user window. L equals auto status messages off.
Now, here we go. This is something that I think dates back to Vocalize. Auto load message. And what that will do is if you turn it on, it allows you to hear what set files are being loaded and when they're being loaded. And I really think that will help set file developers considerably. So that's very nice. And just the other brief thing that I will show you, because it doesn't take too much time, there's a lot more we could tell you about, is going into the Help menu in the WindowEyes control panel.
H, U equals WindowEyes Update.
WindowEyes Update. This is a very nice feature where, especially during the beta cycle, or if WindowEyes starts doing minor patches and things, you can just go to a web page by hitting enter on this WindowEyes update feature, and it will tell you whether you're running the current version of WindowEyes or not. And if you're entitled to download the upgrade that is available, it will just let you download it. So this is a feature that's available in a lot of other mainstream applications, so it's good to see it available in a screen reader. That is just some of what's new in WindowEyes version 4.0 Beta 1 out on the 31st of May from www.gwmicro.com. I think it's also fair that we take a look at some of the notable things that are not in WindowEyes 4.0 just briefly. If you were looking for enhanced support for tables, it is not there in WindowEyes 4.0. I'm not sure why that is. I have a feeling that I might have read somewhere that it's to do with active accessibility needing to be enhanced for that to happen, but there is no real table navigation either in Word or in Internet Explorer, and some people may be a bit disappointed about that. To me, the outstanding disappointment of WindowEyes version 4.0 is the fact that they still haven't addressed some long-standing issues to do with reading with a synthesizer. I would even go as far to say that these are almost bugs. Now, what I'm talking about is when you're using a software speech synthesizer, with the exception of Keynote Gold Multimedia, which doesn't seem to be affected by this problem in WindowEyes, but particularly the Microsoft Speech API software, if you have a version of Eloquence or Learn Up and Housby's Real Speak or the Microsoft Speech, and DeckTalk Access 32 is affected somewhat by this, you will hear a line pause between each line. And depending on the synthesizer, this can be quite serious because it actually sounds like a sentence is finishing. You hear the intonation dropping downwards at the end of each line, and that can actually make reading in context pretty difficult. If you're the kind of person that likes to have punctuation turned off, and you can generally hear by the sound of the synthesizer that you're well used to when you've put full stops in, it makes proofreading very difficult. It also makes things sound very disjointed. At this stage, there is no fix for that, and particularly given that Microsoft Speech has been bundled with WindowEyes for a while now, and they are planning to bundle Eloquence. I think that's actually personally quite serious. The other issue is that there is no ability to skip easily through text when you're continuously reading, which is quite unusual in modern screen readers. For example, you might be reading an email message. I get the New York Times, for instance, sending me a whole lot of emails from different sections I'm interested in. They give the headline, and then they give a quite long URL to tell me where to go to hear the rest of the story. In most screen readers these days, you can tap a key, generally the shift key, and jump straight to another unit. At least most screen readers give you the ability to jump to the next line. Some of them go a bit further than that. There is no such feature in WindowEyes. And one of the factors that really heightens this problem is that when you hit the escape key to stop continuously reading in WindowEyes, you are really quite often quite far away from where you stopped reading. So it can be a bit of a nuisance to try and skip long URLs in WindowEyes. And of course, this is compensated for to some degree by the fact that when you are in an email client, you've got that wonderful line filter that filters out quoted material and things, so I guess it's a swings and roundabouts thing. And I may be personally more concerned about this than most people, which is fine. I'm only one user, and my opinion really doesn't count for anything more than anyone else's. If you're a WindowEyes 3.1 user and you're wondering, is it worth the $100 to go up to 4.0, my answer to that would be an unequivocal yes. There are so many nice new features, and of course, if you're a brow display user of WindowEyes, well, you haven't had any access with your display up until now, there's absolutely no question. I must say I'm very, very impressed with their Braille display support. It's intuitive, it's very easy to use, and very easy to change the defaults if that's what you want to do. Extremely customizable. Internet Explorer access is superb, even in this private beta I have where you might expect some bugs. Overall, it's very stable and extraordinarily fast. If you are somebody looking at getting a new screen reader, maybe you're listening to this program with large image and you're realizing that you might be better off with speech, absolutely consider WindowEyes 4. No question about that. It is one of the leading screen readers out there, and whether you eventually go for it or not, I suspect will depend on your interface preference, what you find intuitive. There is no one best screen reader, in my humble opinion. Some people interact with different interfaces better than other interfaces, but certainly there's no doubt that in terms of feature set and the quality of this product, the stability of it, WindowEyes is out there as one of the leaders, and I would give it 9 out of 10.